Chess is not a game of luck, and neither is business. When you win, it's because you made good decisions. That was a quick quote from Chestnut Checkers by Mark Miller, and today with me to discuss it is Brian Marcos. So, Brian, welcome to the show. Yeah, appreciate you being here. So, you're the one that suggested this book, as all our guests do. I have you choose the book you want to talk about. So, tell me, why do you want to talk about Chestnut Checkers?
Well, this book has made a huge impact on me personally in terms of my leadership here in the department. Went through a transition in 2017 that was pretty significant. It was actually 14 when I was appointed to deputy fire chief for the Smyrna Fire Department. And so just a little bit about myself. I've been working for the city of Smyrna Fire Department now for almost 20 years. Nice. Moved up through the ranks and was appointed to the deputy fire chief in 2014. And like a lot of transition, you know, what got you here won't necessarily get you there in terms of your skills and your knowledge and your abilities. And so I was actually struggling a good bit with the transition. And so for about 2 years, working through some challenges and some culture changes that we were going through, and stumbled across this book after hearing Mark Miller speak in person at a program I was involved in called Leadership Cobb.
Okay, nice.
And so getting to hear his experience and some of the things that he shared really resonated with me on some of the challenges that he was dealing with in terms of the Chick-fil-A operators and the growth that they were going through. And he had referenced this book. And so that's what got me to look into it and read it.
Gotcha. Very cool. Yeah, in reading the book, he has four main keys, and I thought it'd be worth kind of maybe going through those four keys and discussing them a little bit just for those that haven't read the book or those that have to sort of refresh them on it, like it did with me as I reread things and kind of got back into it. So I think maybe we'll go through those a bit. The first one he talks about is bet on leadership. Growing leaders grow organizations. He says, one of his quotes is, develop your pieces early for maximum strategic advantage. So again, it's kind of a play on chess, developing your pieces early, but also with your team, you know, developing those folks.
Yeah. So betting on leadership is a huge one. And just to kind of quickly reference all four, bet on leadership, act as one, win the heart of your employees, and excel at execution. Those were the points that were made when I heard Mark speak. And one thing with betting on leadership, especially in the fire service, that traditionally we don't do a very good job of is, like you mentioned, developing the pieces early for not just their own role and responsibility, but really developing them in such a way that where are you trying to go as an organization? And so if you're trying to go here, let's just say this is where you're trying to go, then we've got to go really early into developing those pieces and not treating them like the book references, like checkers, right?
Yep.
All the pieces have, you know, the same function, they do the same role, and it's very reactive to the game, where with chess, they all play a significant role, whether you're a pawn or you're a king or a queen. They all play a role in the strategy of where you're trying to go.
Yep. And the thing I'm not good at with chess is they mentioned developing pieces early. And yeah, in the game of business, I hope I'm pretty good with that. But yeah, in chess, I've never figured out how to develop pieces. This just, they do what they do. But yeah, in business, it makes a big difference. The second one was act as one. One of the quotes from the book, he said, a unified assault is always preferred over a fragmented one. I think that one's fairly clear, but curious your thoughts unpacking that a bit.
Yeah, so acting is one. It's a lot harder than people might think it is to kind of create a culture where it's not an I or a me situation, but it's kind of a we, us. You know, the challenges are our challenges. They're not just the leadership or administration's challenges. And to kind of take on that attitude from a frontline individual all the way to the chief of an organization or the CEO of an organization, it takes some deliberate, intentional, you know, conversations and professional development to kind of instill that. And so when you think about acting as one, just a real quick example, you know, we have three different shifts, five different divisions within our department. And so it's very easy to silo off if you're not careful.
Yep.
And to create kind of these subcultures that take on a life of their own. And if you're not careful, you'll have a lot of different leadership philosophies and approaches to the work, which makes it difficult to kind of move in one direction. So acting as one really ties everyone back together in such a way that you're all pulling on the rope the same way.
Gotcha. I love that. It's a great way to say it. The next one he has is win the heart. I have kind of a longer quote from that one. He said in the book, he said, quote, When people are given the opportunity to do what they do best, you engage much more than their hands. When you allow people to contribute their unique gifts and ask them to work from a place of personal strength, you do much more than get work done. You honor them and their contributions. Another quote he had was, help people find and fulfill their dreams. So it's, what does winning the heart mean from a place of leadership?
Well, I think you can't really get to know someone unless you know their heart. And so, again, when you're working through challenges and situations where you have somebody to the left and right of you that you're trying to really do some important work, when you know where they're coming from or the experiences that they've had or the things that they enjoy, that really provides a lot of guidance in how you either coach them or how you task them. And by task them, I mean their talents, abilities, skills, knowledge. You know, how do you put them in the place to have the most success, but also do what they do best? You know, at the end of the day, that's where people find motivation and they find purpose, is when they're kind of aligned with those things that they do best. And I don't think you can do that well as a leader leading people when you don't know the heart of your organization.
Gotcha. I like it. I hadn't heard that TASK acronym either before. Do you remember where that came from? I like that.
Yeah. So I believe I got it from the Speed of Trust.
Okay.
And they pulled it from a Gallup poll that I think said that about only 20% of people in an organization feel that they're actually being tasked correctly under that acronym.
Wow.
So, you know, for me, when I think about building trust and winning the heart of your employees, you really want to put them in a position where they're hitting doubles and triples as much as possible, you know, to use a sports analogy.
Yep.
You want them feeling like they're having some consistent success in what their contributions are. Because today's workforce, they're not looking necessarily to be in charge of anybody as much as they're looking to have their contributions felt, if you will, in the organization.
Yeah.
That's where we sustain employee morale and engagement.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of times, yeah, it's not about the work people do, but it's how much that work is used and appreciated. If you do a lot of work and it gets thrown away, your value feels very low. It makes it tough. The fourth one here, and I think it's last for a reason, is excel at execution. If you consistently make the right moves at the right time, you win. And he also said, the right moves involve intentionally deploying the right resources at the right time for maximum effort. So the same kind of thing, but about timing, when to deploy these resources, your people that you've built up through kind of the previous steps to excel at execution. So what do you take out of that one?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, you got to get results. You've got to get results. You've got to, I think that's when the proof's in the pudding, if you will, for leadership and for impact. You know, if you see the results of your work and you're making the right moves and you're putting the right people in position, you're winning the heart of your employees, you're taking the right chances, so to speak, betting on leadership, you know, you're making the right hires. If all those things are happening in those sequences, what ends up happening is you excel at execution. Now, it doesn't mean that you're not adaptable and that some circumstances might put you back on your heels, but you've got a mature organization that can kind of take that hit, if you will, pivot, and then still continue to make progress because you got the bench. The bench is deep, if you will, to make those adjustments.
Gotcha. Well said. That kind of leads into one of the main areas I pulled out of this book was about assigning outcomes. I really like the way he approached this. He said, the quote for the book, he said, I'm not talking about just assigning tasks. Certainly you'll continue to do that as needed. But I'm talking about assigning outcomes. When people know the outcome you want or need, and you don't know how to, and you don't tell them how to get it done, their responsibility meter comes alive. It reminds me of, I don't know if you've read the Personal MBA, but it talks about the idea of commander's intent, which you probably have heard of on the battlefield, where you not only tell people what you want to do, you tell them why you want them to do it, so they can shift gears if needed. Versus if you say, "Hey, take this hill," and they can't take the hill, they're like, "Well, I can't take it. I don't know what to do." But if you say, "Here's why we're trying to do it," they can think of other ways to do it. I saw a silly example of this not long ago when I was at the sub shop. A woman came back into Jersey Mike's and said, "Hey, you made my sandwich incorrectly." She said, "I need you to remake the sandwich. You made it incorrectly. It wasn't supposed to have cheese on it, and my son's allergic to cheese." And because she said why it was made incorrectly, the guy making the sandwich said, "Actually, the bread you chose has cheese on it too. So as a result, let's choose different bread and get it fixed. You know, so sorry we made a mistake." But if she had just said, "Hey, you made this wrong. It wasn't supposed to have cheese," he would have said, "Sure," and fixed it and still gotten the son allergic, you know, spike that allergy, but her giving the why behind her request, it was, again, silly example, but the why made sure that he was able to act appropriately. And I think that goes, I mean, little things like that to bigger things in armies and, yeah, all over the place. Have you seen that in your role where commander's intent kind of plays in?
Absolutely. In fact, it's so much so that back to acting as one, one of the forms of communication that we've taken on when we deal with projects with our organization is we'll communicate what's called a SWIC. Here's the situation. Here's what's going on. Here's my intentions. Here are my concerns. And here's how I'd like it communicated. Hmm. And so when you use that acronym in terms of communicating a project that you'd like to have executed, it's just interesting to me the dynamics of letting people know what your concerns are and what your intentions are.
Yep.
And when you share those parts to the effort, what ends up happening is a lot of the time the folks will rally around those concerns. They'll find solutions for those concerns. And once they understand your intentions, then they can navigate the ambiguity that sometimes is within a project because they know what the intent, ultimate intent is. So I think anytime you can share as much as possible on the intent, and also don't be afraid as a leader to share the concerns that you have with the project or with whatever you're trying to get resolved. When those two things are laid out there, I think one is it speeds up trust because they recognize your concerns, and then they know that you trust them to get those solutions in play.
Yeah, I think it comes down to empowerment too, and the dichotomy of leadership. I don't know if you read that book from Jocko Willink, fantastic book, but he talks about decentralized command and basically empowering your team to make decisions, which can be tough. I mean, that's something we've struggled with over the years. Our team is always wanting to not make a mistake, and so they come to us with every question. We say, no, it's okay. If you make a mistake, it happens, but I want you to, here's why we're doing what we're doing, go for it. And even like in the spending money, we say, hey, if you need to spend a couple $100, go spend it. If you think it's the right decision, it's the right decision. If it's not, we'll discuss and fix it for next time. But that empowerment makes things move so much more quickly, can help your clients or, you know, the people you serve, and frankly can take some pressure off the leadership too, to not have to be responding to every little situation that comes up. If you have that empowerment, and the empowerment comes from trust and kind of works its way back up the four pieces we talked about to build that trust in the end.
Well, I think any leader that is either running an organization or is a part of a big team recognizes you only have so much bandwidth and so many resources available to you. And so if you really want to go far, you have to go together. Mm-hmm. If you want to go fast, go by yourself.
Yep.
But if you want to go far, go together. And so the only way to really accomplish anything significant, in my opinion, is that you got to build the team out in such a way. That's just, basketball is one of my favorite sports. And so when I think about the teams that make it to the finals of an NBA championship, it's usually the teams that have a deep bench. A good example of this is the San Antonio Spurs. They're a small market franchise that really don't have the resources like an LA or a New York or, you know, the East Coast, West Coast kind of market. But they're able to have success because they have built in excellence into their process.
Mm-hmm.
And they recruit for people and not necessarily just the five-star player. They build a deep bench. And that's why you always see them in contention for a championship, is because they've taken that model of developing a strong culture and making sure that the bench is deep, because players get hurt. Things happen. It's just natural, especially when you're competing, whether that's in the business field or in the athletic world. You got to make sure your bench is deep and that everybody knows the assignment above and below them.
Yep. Yeah, well said. So I'm a Michigan football fan, and this was a good year for us, of course. But what was interesting I was reading is most teams, the Alabama and Georgia, like they both had, I think, 18 five-stars recruits on their team. Michigan had two. And so to your point, it's not about how many five-stars you have. It's about building, getting them going the right direction and having that super deep bench. I mean, they had two five-star recruits, but they're probably going to have the most players ever taken in a single NFL draft just because they've built that deep with so many people. And it worked out well for them. Now, I'm a little concerned as a Michigan fan that they're going to have everyone taken in the draft and there's really no one left this year, but it was a good year last year at least, so that was fun. As we're wrapping things up here, yeah, what else have we not hit from the book that really stood out to you? Any other lessons you wanted to share from it?
No, I mean, I think the winning the heart piece, it's interesting. You know, we sometimes think that you have to be this emotional. We are emotional creatures, you know, in a lot of ways. But the reality is you can, as a leader, build processes into being more effective in this area as far as winning the heart. And I just want to give one small example. So for me, I lean towards being results oriented. I'm not kind of on the relational side. I lean more results.
Mm-hmm.
And so because I know that about myself, you know, one of the things that our leadership team will do is they'll do something called a scouting report. and they will actually keep an eye out for people that are doing things that kind of relate to our values as an organization, and they'll make some detailed notes about it. And so when we meet as a command staff, I'm very much aware of that picture of what the people are doing in the organization. And so when I run into them or I see them, I can have a very good quality interaction with them on the things that they're doing and doing well. And so it really amplifies that interaction in terms of winning the heart. Write them a handwritten note, send it to their house.
Yep.
And so I think in terms of winning the heart, if your audience ever finds themselves where it's like, oh man, you know, how do you win the heart? I mean, that's not my thing. There's certainly a process you can build in that will create the desired outcome that you're looking for as far as connection with people.
Gotcha.
In the right way. So that's just something I wanted to highlight there.
I like that. So roughly how many people are we talking about that are like under your command that could come up in that kind of conversation?
Yeah, so there's 87 people in our department, and I've got a command staff or a leadership team of 9 people.
Okay.
Gotcha. And so those 9 people will kind of keep an eye out and report, you know, out in an ops meeting. And the reality is like when you think of high performers in the organization, they're not really looking for you to shake their hand and say, hey, you're a great guy, thanks for working for us. They want to know details. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to know that you know that the impact and the contribution that they're given. So that also is a force multiplier, because I can speak in detail to the work that they're doing versus just a kind of a political handshake and a kissing the baby kind of attitude, right, about it, you know? So it's awesome. Very helpful.
Yeah. Especially for a team that size. Yeah. We're a team of 9. Our leadership team is 4. So we're basically an order of magnitude smaller, but we do the same thing every week. We go through, here's our 5 core values. Here's the 9 of us on the team. What have we seen people, you know, exemplify that? And then we call them out specifically for it. You know, next time I talk to them, say, hey, I know that you went above and beyond to help this client or to do whatever. And yeah, it's a lot easier, I think, in our case, because we can go through literally every person to see what they did. But
yeah.
It's the same kind of idea where, yeah, you can put intention behind it, because that's the kind of thing I'm not good at naturally either. I'm more analytical. And so forcing me to slow down and actually look at that and then to reach out specifically and thank them specifically for what they did is fantastic. So, yeah, great call. Yeah, so I think the last little quote we'll kind of end on here is about focusing on the right things. He said, when you don't have time to do your job, that's a good indication you're playing the wrong game. And so that's something I've struggled with as our team has grown. I've gone from being a developer to being a leader. You know, it's what game am I even playing? And figuring out the right game to play is easier said than done sometimes. But these kind of books and these kind of conversations certainly help with that.
Yeah, and with that, that's true. And I think it's so interesting that I got a chance to hear Carol Tomei, who's now the CEO of UPS, one time. And I remember asking her a question when she was speaking to us. I said, how are you? She's responsible for 3% of the GDP in goods out there. And so if she has a bad day, the whole country has a bad day, right? And so I'm sitting there looking at her going, how are you so present right now with us? And she said, Brian, she said, I schedule to my priorities. Mm-hmm. And my priorities right now is to be here with you for 15 minutes. And when I leave, I'll have another priority that I'm focused on, because I schedule everything to my calendar that's important to me.
Yeah.
I don't allow my calendar to be attacked. And so I've taken on that attitude years and years ago. And what's been great about that is that you are able to be fully present if you manage your time and you stay in kind of that quadrant 2 space,
mm-hmm.
the important non-urgent space.
The Eisenhower matrix, yeah.
Yeah, it's just fantastic. And so I agree. If you find yourself constantly reacting, then there's probably some areas for better time management and maybe some delegation that needs to happen and building out that team for sure.
Yeah. I notice that when I go out to lunch or coffee with people, the higher up they are in their organization, the more focused they tend to be, even though they have more responsibilities. It's the ones further down and the ones that are checking their phone and they're worried and, you know, sorry, I got to look again and see what's going on. But the ones I met a few leaders that are over big companies and they're fully present. And it was astounded me the first few times. So I realized again, what you just said so eloquently is how they were able to make that happen. So that's a fantastic way to end it, I think, Brian. If folks want to learn more about you or follow what you do, where can they track you down?
Yeah, so I kind of keep it simple. So LinkedIn is where I tend to put a lot of my information out. And, of course, I work for the City of Smyrna Fire Department, and so they can check out our website and see all the things that we got going on. Like us on Facebook as far as the department goes. We got constant activities information going on out there. But it's been a pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you a little bit about Chestnut Checkers.
Yeah, this was great. Yeah, we'll put those links in the show notes for people that want to find you. And, yeah, thanks for your time. This was great. Appreciate it.